very much. Our next speaker will be Roger Miller, teaches economics at the University of Washington. And Roger has a PhD in economics from the University of Chicago, and is the author of a huge number of books. I think he turns one out at least every 5 or 6 weeks, including some that appear even under his own name. In the last couple of years, he has authored an outstanding text on the principle of economics that has the unique merit of having some vitality to it, makes it appealing to virtually anybody who has any life left in him. Roger. First thing I'd like to do is disagree with one of the comments by our speaker at lunch, who stated that the people don't like to generally evacuate their bowels in public, but I've been seeing that from Washington on television for about 3 years now. And the most egregious example of public bowel movement from Washington is coming out on the subject of the so-called energy crisis. I would like to take a few minutes of your time to talk about the short-run implications of the energy crisis, and the next speaker is going to talk about the long-run implications. You may find it strange, but I have some, you've heard about the crisis, but I have some recent data here from Science Magazine, January 1974, and it says, for example, in recent weeks, imports have exceeded those of a year ago by 25%, but we've been told there's an embargo, right? I've also found out that major inventories of such things as fuel oil and crude are higher than they have ever been in the history of the United States. Strange thing, though, in Seattle and Miami and a few other places, there are motorists lined up outside gas stations for a mile and a half, and I think I read in the newspaper one place there were lined up for 5 miles. How can that be? How can we have shortages when there are so many supplies of the products we are seeking? Well, you may remember something that happened a little while back. Nobody seems to talk about it anymore, but it was called a meat crisis. It was called a meat shortage. And everybody was worried about where we were going to get our meat because there was no meat on the shelves. Nobody talks about the meat crisis anymore. A few people complain about the high price of meat. Yet when you go to the supermarket, you can buy just about all you want to buy at the going price. Now, there are a few similarities. In fact, the similarities are so obvious, it's amazing that nobody brings out what happened in the past and compared it with what happened today. What happened with meat prices? What happened with meat in general? Well, the government, in an effort, a vain effort, as we all well know, to hold down prices in general, had some selective price controls after it lifted some other ones. And one of the price controls had to do with wholesale meat prices. So, while the price of meat was controlled at the wholesale level, entrepreneurs who happened to stock, who happened to have herds of cattle and or stock houses, decided to wait until price controls were lifted. And the result was that there was a shortage. That is, they weren't letting all of the products onto the market. They normally would have in anticipation of a higher price. What's happening today? You find that Standard Oil, I was on the plane a few weeks back, about a month ago, talking to a Standard Oil executive who said, we're sending more men up to Lower Alaska to build more storage tanks for our crude.
Who was the man? They never came in for an appropriation, and that's not true.
Okay. And the companies building storage tanks were doing a very rational thing that in beginning economics you learn about. In beginning economics, you learn that entrepreneurs are out to maximize, just like everybody else, and you expect them to maximize, given whatever governmental constraints there are. One of the governmental constraints today is that prices are not allowed to rise to the market clearing price. Now, what would a rational entrepreneur do if he anticipated that the free market price was considerably higher than the price that he is allowed to sell his product today? Hold it off the market. It doesn't require a monopoly to do that. You can have the most competitive industry in the world, and the competitors, without conspiring, will decide voluntarily to hold off a product if they know that in future months the government is going to allow the price of that product to rise to a free market clearing price that will be much more profitable. What we had all along during phase 2, 3, 4, whatever we are at now, various examples of how the government would raise the price on one thing that was out of line, and it would cause a shortage somewhere else and raise the price on that and cause another shortage. And one good example, which I like to often quote, is the same thing that we're seeing now. And the government started to control prices in phase one, and then in phase two, shortages started to appear in heating oil, okay, because the price happened to be, there's a seasonal variation in the price of heating oil with respect to gasoline. You use more gas in the summer than you do heating oil, obviously, so you'd think there would be a change in relative prices. When you fix the price at the wrong time of the season, then you can expect the next phase of the season you're going to be out of line. Well, this went on from 71 to 72 to 73, and I won't bother you with the exact statistics, but it was a seesaw. First, we have a shortage in one heating oil, then it would be in gasoline, then they change the price of that, and now we're doing the same thing. And people are wondering, well, why, you know, why are we continuing to have this crisis? It's funny that we happen to have, well, it's not funny, it's sort of tragic, but it's instructive to see how what I call the new Puritans are using the so-called energy crisis as a vehicle to start dictating your lifestyle and my lifestyle. There were articles immediately after the start of the so-called energy crisis. By the way, nobody seems to remember, but back in about 1967, there was also a Mideast war, and oil didn't flow from the Mideast then. Well, we weren't importing that much, but we happened, Europe was, and we made an arrangement whereby we exported to them a large amount of oil. But nobody remembers there being a crisis. And why was it different then than it is today? The difference was then we didn't have controls, today we do. Then, in anticipation of a reduction in world oil supplies, oil prices started going up. There was no big jump in the price of oil, and nobody really noticed it. There were no disruptions in the industry. In any event, the so-called crisis today is, as I said, has been used as a vehicle by the new Puritans to tell us that we should love the energy crisis. Why should we love the energy crisis? Well, we're getting back to nature. It's better for you to have a sweater and keep your thermostat at 58. It's better for you to ride your bicycle than to get in the car. And, you know, you can add to the list. What's strange about it, and I presume that people in this audience saw it happening, but when I question people about this, when I question my class about this, a large number of students, nobody seems to get upset about it. They think that's normal, the normal function of a government official such as Simon or Nixon, to tell us what is good for us, because after all, we're getting soft, or we're becoming energy pigs, or you name it, and that's what we've become. And it's sort of like everybody's supposed to put on a hair shirt and wear it around for all the bad things we did in the past. It's a strange phenomenon, and yet it's something I think we should guard against. It's something that I like to mention to people. You know, you see it. I was in Europe this summer, and you have similar things happening there, and you ask people about it, and they don't realize that this is a sort of an insidious way for the government to start dictating your lifestyle. Okay, now, with respect to ration, everybody's calling for rationing. Okay, in the first place, I indicated that the current statistics show we have as many oil products as we had in the past, but even if we didn't, it doesn't matter. Rationing is a way in which you can redistribute income, perhaps, and I'll explain that in a minute. There is no way in the world that you can get a larger supply of any product in the world by rationing it. And that's what is quite hard to understand when people discuss the idea of rationing and how we need rationing. It's as if it would solve a so-called shortage problem. Okay? At most, it will redistribute income. And how does it do that? All right, how do you ration tickets for gasoline? Well, some people said you ration on a number of cars. Okay, now, the very poor who are supposed to be worried about, who Nixon and Simon and every other person who talked about the energy crisis complained about the fact that with higher oil prices, they were the ones who were going to get screwed the most, would certainly be no better off and perhaps would be worse off if you rationed coupons on the basis of the number of cars you had. Okay, or you did it on the basis of the number of miles you have. The poor don't drive at all. They don't have automobiles, right? The very poor. And, as a matter of fact, if you look at the average gasoline consumption in the United States, even if you had a 50% rise in gasoline prices, that works out to something like $1.10 a week or $1.05 a week for the average driver. And it's very hard to imagine why people are calling for rationing in that case, yet when meat prices went up 22% or something like 30%, nobody called for the rationing of meat. Now, why is oil, you know, a special product? Oil products are special and meat products aren't. You ration one, you don't ration the other. It's interesting to note that Herb Stein, in one of his few intelligible pieces, wrote a humorous letter to the editor of the New York Times about saying, well, let's have ration coupons for meat. And he was sort of joking around, showing how ridiculous it was to have ration coupons for meat. Well, I have a sort of wacky theory about this, and it's my, you can label it a fairy tale if you want. I can't imagine that the economic advisors around President Nixon don't understand supply and demand, okay? And that's all we're talking about. I can't imagine that when they started talking about keeping price controls on oil products in the face of a potential reduction in supply of oil products, or crude, that those advisors didn't inform him that if he did this, there were going to be shortages, okay? I find that very hard to believe, okay? Now, given that that's hard to believe, I think that perhaps, and this is, you know, take it for what it's worth, you look at a person who's down in the popularity polls, who's fighting for his political life, and he asks himself, what can I do to get the public to rally around me? Okay, wars aren't popular anymore, so you can't create a crisis by creating a war. What do? You create some sort of other crisis. So you create an energy crisis. And it's not coincidental that the Gallup polls and the Harris poll on the president's popularity bottomed just before the announcement of the energy crisis and started going up as he started making his speeches about how we were going to pull out of it. In fact, it was interesting to see the about face in his particular view of himself vis-a-vis the public when in one speech he was very solemn and then a week later he was actually kidding about his impeachment. And in between, there was the announcement of the energy crisis. Now, it's sort of far out, naive politics on my part. I'm an economist, know nothing about politics. But I like to present this as a possibility because I just can't imagine that someone who has so many PhDs around him and doesn't take a PhD to know that when you put a price below the intersection of a supply and demand curve, you're going to have a shortage, they didn't inform him what was going to happen. I think that this was known on the part of many politicians, including the chief of them all. And I predict, I wrote a book on this last year, at the end of the year, and I put it all in the past tense. So in terms of the energy crisis, I didn't talk about the current energy crisis because there really is no crisis now. There's no crisis in terms of fuel oil. There's no crisis in terms of fuel oil. Now, we're sort of past the coldest part of the winter, and in fact, a lot of companies somebody said, well, yes, there is. There's a crisis in fuel oil. We only have enough to last until next year. There's going to be perhaps a continued crisis in certain parts of the country in gasoline because of the government's allocation program. Simon admitted that they screwed up completely, but he said it's normal to screw up in the beginning, you know, there's a learning by doing process. I think that's all going to be water under the bridge. I predict that oil prices within, let's say, the next 3 years are going to come tumbling down because of the incentive for, you know, anybody who can drill into the ground to bring something up at current world oil prices. And so we're not in the age when we have to stop consuming in our past rates because we've reached the end of the well. I think that's sort of the scare tactics of environmentalists, and it's also an effective tool for government bureaucrats who like to get something to put their hands into. Thank you.